I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. After a string of disappointing years for the UMKC women's basketball team, there's a new coach in charge. Just 8 years after her own graduation, J.C. Hoyt might be the youngest head coach in the country. But will her age be a boon or a burden? We'll meet her today and ask about her plans to turn the program around. Then, living in the country can be idyllic, fresh air, nature, a slower pace. Not so great, a lack of convenient health care. We'll ask if a new nursing school in Salina can enroll enough students to make a difference helping residents in rural Kansas find the help they need. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. UMKC's new women's basketball coach, J.C. Hoyt, was a dominant high school player whose mother was a legendary coach herself. At 29, she just became one of the nation's youngest Division I coaches as she was named head coach of the UMKC women's basketball team. J.C. Hoyt has a challenge ahead. The Kangaroos are coming off of five straight losing seasons and a 10-19 record just last year. J.C. Hoyt joins us now, and welcome and congratulations.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
Now, I understand you've been living in a hotel the last few days because of some misfortune that happened to you out at Manhattan, Kansas. What have you been going through lately? And how can Kansas City help you?
I've been in a hotel since I got here. Had a pretty unfortunate kind of tragedy strike me, actually, the day of my press conference. My house in Manhattan, because I was a K-State or assistant
coach,
right?
Yeah.
So I was trying to sell my house so I could buy one here, and was pretty excited with everything. And I had lightning strike it, and I lost everything.
Oh my gosh!
It's everything. All gone. Yeah, you know, I was so anxious and eager to get here that the second my background check cleared, I just kind of threw everything in a suitcase and got on the road to get here and get started. But I will say this, it's been very hard. My faith is very strong, so that's absolutely carried me through and given me a lot of good perspective. It's given me great perspective to start the job because, you know, here I am thinking, I was so overwhelmed with everything and just kind of started to think it was about me for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then I walk through the house and I see everything is gone. And I just was quickly reminded, you know what? This is life, and life is much more important than a job. And it's given me great perspective with my team, actually.
Yeah. Well, I hope things go better in the weeks ahead as you start recruiting and everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, your mom and dad are coaches, and I wanted to give our listeners a sense of just how competitive your family is. The Star just did a story on you, JC, and you're hiring at UMKC. And the story talked about you and your mom racing to the car after dinner the night before you were to be introduced as the new coach here. Racing your mom to the car, JC. Is that how you guys roll?
You know, that is exactly how we roll. I compete in everything I do. I can't help it. I can't shut it off. And sometimes I have to kind of keep it a secret because a lot of people probably wouldn't like me if they knew that I was, you know, racing them every second or everything. I just view it as a competition. And that's something that's really fueled myself, my family. You know, any Christmas gathering, any family get together, it's always about competition and games.
What kind of games do you compete in when the family gets together?
Everything. You know, we have organized kickball games, organized basketball games, and my mom is kind of the ringleader of that. And you know, all her brothers and sisters, they're all in on it. They're getting a little older now, but they still play pretty hard.
Well, you're in good company because, you know, Michael Jordan was a legendary, ultra, hyper-competitive guy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought he was kind of a jerk, but hey, it sort of worked out for him okay, didn't it? At least on some levels.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that you have to have that mentality in order to get better and push yourself to be at your best on a daily basis.
You grew up in the gym watching your mom coach at Hoxie High School in Northwest Kansas. She was your coach, too, in high school. And I'm wondering, what's it like being a head coach kid? Because that's got to be a little awkward. You know, Bill Self just did it with his son, Tyler, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering how it worked for you.
Yeah, you know, growing up, under the microscope, I guess, was hard sometimes, and your teammates look at you a little differently. So that was certainly tough and challenging.
They couldn't complain about the coach to you because the coach was mom,
right? Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, to be honest, they did complain, and that was hard for me. And sometimes I was complaining with them. But no, it's been great. I am so thankful for just the lessons that I learned going through that. And I think, you know, you brought up my age earlier. And something that I think people don't realize is that when you are a coach's kid, you're already learning the game, and I've been around it my whole life. So although I may not have been in as many game type situations as a head coach, I've been in huddles and, you know, watching my mom draw up plays since I was for as long as I can remember.
So you know it. You know that world.
Right.
Yeah. You know, she won a lot of games, mm-hmm. 107 consecutive games at one point in four straight Class 1A state championships. Why was she so good?
She was so good because she did the small things, the most fundamental basic things correctly.
Such as?
On a daily basis. Just a work ethic and bringing passion every single day. And sometimes people get caught up in, you know, the big plays and the big moments and the state championships. But what I watched her do was start the foundation of that long before it came to fruition with the state titles.
Yeah.
So, you know, just that work ethic, that competitive spirit, bringing that to every play, every drill, every practice.
You know, your mom and dad raised you to believe ambition had no limits. I mean, no limits at all. Was that a little unusual among your friends out there in Northwestern Kansas, or maybe not?
Yeah, it was. You know, I was so thankful. I had players to look up to. Jackie Stiles was one that always stood out to me.
She's your idol, right?
She was my idol, yes.
The great player for Missouri State, great scorer and all that.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, one big thing about Jackie when she was kind of at her prime, she talked about how she made 1,000 shots a day. And
you did the same thing.
I did the same, but the difference was I was in fourth grade at the time. So I would just, you know, lock myself. I always had keys, of course, because of my parents. So I would just get the gym keys and go over there. And I mean, sometimes it would take me, you know, 5 and 6 hours, but I wanted to be great. And I saw that it took a tremendous amount of commitment and discipline to do that.
You also wore your mouth guard like the great Jackie Stiles, right?
I did.
And what does that tell us about that?
Oh, well, she just, you know, when you idolize someone, you want to be exactly like them. And she wore a mouth guard. So I would actually take the top off of those Kool-Aid. I don't know if you remember those plastic Kool-Aid juice bottles.
Yes.
And so I would take the top off that and I'd put it in my mouth and pretend like I had her mouthpiece. That's kind of embarrassing now. But
you know, you've said that becoming a Division I coach, JC, is a longstanding dream. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering why. Maybe given your pedigree, you didn't have much choice, but you're basically placing your future as a head coach in the hands of a bunch of college kids. Somebody gets hurt, someone has boyfriend problems, girlfriend problems, someone has, you know, grade problems, and somehow it washes back on the head coach.
Right. Well, for me, I love this game. I love to compete. And this game is really just a platform for me to do those things. But more importantly, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. These kids, they're going through some things. There's going to be injuries. I was very injury prone in college. So I know what that's like. I know what it's like to go through just hardships in life. You know, obviously, I just went through it with the fire issue. But this is just really a platform for me to not just be a coach, but to help these kids through life and show them the big picture and help them to go out and be successful in life after basketball stops. So that's really why I wanted to be a head coach, because I want that direct impact to really change their lives and help them go out and be young, successful, confident women.
This was interesting to me. You played college ball at Wichita State and then at Fort Hays State.
Mm-hmm.
You left Wichita State after your sophomore season, in which you were the team captain, because you didn't like the coach. What was so wrong with her, and what was your takeaway from that experience?
Well, you know, I was young and dumb. There were some probably there were probably some things that I didn't really understand at the time that I would handle much differently now, being older and more mature. I learned a lot from that coach, things and lessons that I'll take with me for the rest of my career. For me, it just kind of I don't look at it as a failure. I look at it as just an opportunity that I had that really taught me a lot. And now it's going to make me a better coach because I'm taking those lessons that I learned. And sometimes it's not so much about what to do, but what not to do as a coach. And that experience has really helped me with that.
You spent 3 seasons coaching at K-State and doing some recruiting there. That's an interesting side of the business to me because it's conducted largely in the shadows of the sports world. How did you convince student athletes to come to K-State, and how are you going to convince them to come to UMKC?
Mm-hmm. So K-State really emphasizes a family atmosphere, and I learned so much from Coach Bill Snyder in that he's the one who really laid that foundation, and everyone bought into it. And it's true because there's, every school has great things about it, bad things about it. But one thing that you can always have is family and great people around you. And so I will definitely kind of steal that and make it our own here at UMKC. Mm. It's something that we talk about on a daily basis. And it kind of goes back to that stuff that I was talking earlier about, just the life stuff. And, if you show kids that you're going to be there for them off the court, then they will run through a wall for you on the court.
Yeah, I mentioned that the Roos have been struggling lately with losing records for the past 5 seasons. I'm sure a big part of why you were hired on was to reverse that trend. How do you hope to implement a tradition of winning, and how soon do you expect to see the team stringing together some winning seasons here?
Yeah, to be honest, we don't really focus on wins and losses. We just focus on the daily grind and doing every little thing right on a daily basis. We've been getting them up. Our team has been working really hard already this summer. We're practicing now.
Really?
And we're just really trying to change the culture and the mindset.
Can you go coach them even during the month of June?
Yes. So we've been practicing for 2 hours a week, and then they get 6 hours of strength and conditioning on top of that. And we've been, grinding it out every morning at 7 a.m., 7 to 9 a.m. every morning.
At Swinney on campus?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been fun. It's, it's just the little things on a daily basis that add up. And we just talk about, hey, if we compete and we do the little things right, every single play, every single drill, every single hour, every single day, every single week, then we're going to look back and we're going to be really proud of what we've accomplished.
What's a little thing? Because you hear that phrase kicked around in sports a lot. What's a little thing?
We really emphasize giving energy to your teammates, celebrating what we call passion plays. We have vampire plays that we say suck the energy out of you, and we have passion plays, and those are energy-giving plays. So we celebrate just the tiniest things for our teammates. It's the difference between, not touching a line and just stopping short 1 inch. It's the difference between, getting frustrated and quitting on a drill 2 seconds with 2 seconds remaining or finishing that play through. Yeah. So just little things like that that build a mindset.
J.C. Hoyt is my guest. She's the new women's basketball coach at UMKC. As you look ahead to your first season as head coach, J.C., what do you have to do to look back and then one day call it a successful first year?
That's a good question. I think just changing the culture and getting kids to understand that my goal would be that our players can coach themselves, and that it's not always coming from the coaches to make corrections or do things the right way, that it's coming from themselves. And I would say that's something that we were really able to do at K-State in my last year, is we could almost put those kids on the floor and they would be running their own practice without a coach even present. And that's the point that I want to get to. I think that's, when you can get a whole team to buy into greatness and what that looks like and to hold each other accountable to that, that will be something that's very pleasing for me.
At K-State, you coach Kindred Wiesman, who had a prolific career there. She graduated this year and you've hired her as an assistant coach on your staff. What makes her such a good fit for your team, despite having no official coaching experience?
Yeah, Kindred has a very, very long list of things that make her a great coach. First of all, she's from this area. She played on one of the top AAU club teams in the area. But the most important thing is that Kindred was always more of a player, or I'm sorry, more of a coach than she was a player for us at K-State. She was that coach in the locker room, on the floor, always doing those little things right. Her leadership was the best I've ever been around. So it was a very easy decision for me to bring her along and have someone that understands what it takes to be great, understand my vision and my temperament and what I kind of want things to look like. And she probably is already over it a little bit because I've been making her get out there with the girls every single day. And but she's the best example I can give them. So she's been great.
Have you played her in one-on-one? Do you still play?
I wish. I have terrible knees.
Oh, do you?
I would take her on in a shooting contest,
would
though.
You?
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to go come see that sometime. That's J.C. Hoyt. She's the new women's basketball coach at UMKC. And, J.C., all the best to you. We'll be watching closely. Hope it goes well.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet. Time for a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the shortage of nurses in rural Kansas and Missouri. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I am Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, former pitcher and current broadcaster Jeff Montgomery shared stories of Kansas City's Boys in Blue. We also learned a little bit about poverty in Johnson County. You can hear those conversations at kcur.org/up-to-date. You can also go to the NPR1 app. Tomorrow, why Midwesterners should care about the U.S.-Mexico border. And we'll find out what's keeping small towns hopeful and resilient in the 21st century. Well, Kansas has a nursing shortage. So does Missouri. In fact, the shortage in Missouri is at an all-time high. Then again, there are nursing shortages pretty much everywhere these days, especially in rural parts of the country. Kansas now is taking steps to do something about it. The University of Kansas School of Nursing is partnering with Salina Regional Health Center to open a new campus location in Salina. The objective is to build healthy communities, hire more nurses, make more nurses, particularly in underserved parts of the state. Now a conversation about the nursing shortage in rural America and one effort to combat it in Kansas. With us is Sally Molisky. She's dean of the KU School of Nursing. And Sally, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Brock Slaybach is senior vice president for member services for the National Rural Health Association. Brock, good morning to you.
Thank you.
On the phone with us is Luann Smith. She's chief nursing officer for the Salina Regional Health Center. Luann, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
You bet. And Sally, what's KU have in mind here with this new campus in Salina? What are you aiming to do?
Well, our primary goal was recognizing the need for increased pipeline of nurses in the rural area. And that means educating nurses in the rural area. Our hope is that by working with Salina Regional, educating nurses in their home areas, that they will then stay in the areas in which they're educated and the areas that need them.
Luann, I'm wondering, just because you place a school in a rural part of the state, and we're talking about Salina in this case, does that necessarily translate to more students wanting to study to be a nurse in rural Kansas?
Well, we're certainly hoping so. There's a lot of people who are interested in nursing. If we can just find ways to educate them in the area and keep them in the area. We've had a shortage of nurses here in Salina for at least the past 3 or 4 years. We have not been able to fill our positions. So we're hoping to increase the education and increase the interest.
Luann, is there any guarantee that a graduate of this program will stay in rural Kansas?
Well, not necessarily a guarantee, but we're hoping that, you know, we can pull from the Western Kansas area, and to them, Salina is a bigger city, and if they come here to be educated, they'll either go back home to their Western Kansas roots or stay in Salina. All of our surrounding hospitals are having the same nursing shortage that we're experiencing.
Hmm. Brock Slaybach with the National Rural Health Association. What are some states doing, Brock, to ensure that graduates from their nursing and doctor programs are sticking around to practice in rural parts of those states? Are there techniques and motivational things that are at work out there?
Well, Steve, I think there are a lot of programs that states are using to influence the decisions that they're making First of all, scholarships available to individuals at the state level to pursue nursing careers. The second, and I've seen it done successfully, I've done this myself as a hospital administrator, and that is provide scholarships to local individuals from the hospital directly to attend nursing schools. And then the commitment would be at the conclusion of their training, they would come back to that facility for an equal number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been very effective at solving at least the nursing shortage I had at my hospital.
Sally, are you doing some of that with how you're structuring this program, trying to work in some guarantees there?
Yes. And as Lou Ann said, not necessarily guarantees, but the Salina Regional Health System has some innovative practices in terms of tuition loan forgiveness and reimbursement that helps encourage graduates to not only stay in, but come to the area to practice.
Stella, you plan to start small here in terms of the number of graduates and then expand rather rapidly. Tell us about what kind of trajectory you have in mind.
That's correct. We're starting with 12 students this fall coming in August.
Sort of a shakedown your first year, I imagine.
Right. And we're joining our colleagues from the medical school. Thanks to the generosity of the Salina community, we're starting out in a small space, and we're going to be moving next year with our colleagues from the medical school into a much larger remodeled space. So with that, next year we'll increase by another 12, so we'll have 24 in Salina in fall of 2018. And over the next 5 years, we're going to be incrementally increasing our enrollment until we reach 48.
To what extent, if this is successful, will that put a dent in the shortage in rural Kansas? Or do you still fall short, even when you're going full throttle?
Yes, we do. You know, again, as Lou Ann said, it's not just Salina Regional, but it's the whole western rural area of Kansas where we're seeing shortages. And it's probably a drop in the bucket, unfortunately. We want to, in addition to our program, encourage other programs to think about educating BSN-level nurses for rural health and specific to that area.
Yeah, in fact, Lou Ann, there are other rural nursing programs popping up in Kansas. I saw that Kansas Wesleyan University and the Salina Area Technical College are launching new programs to expand nursing education in the Salina area. Is that competition, or do you view it as another way to fill this gaping need we're talking about here?
Well, we just view it as another way to fill the need. We think there's room for all of these programs. Kansas Wesleyan has had a nursing program in the past, and they're in a rebuilding phase. And then Salina Area Technical is looking at a ADN program, a two-year program. And I think there's room for all of these programs, and I think we'll be able to utilize the nurses from all these programs. And as Sally said, we have a very aggressive loan forgiveness program, as well as a scholarship committee that interviews. And we give very nice scholarships with a tie of service to come here to work. So we're excited about all the programs.
You know, Brock, I'm just really struck by what Sally said, that even once the program is going full throttle, it's only going to be a drop in the bucket in terms of the need out there. Give us some context. How great is the shortage out there in Kansas and across the country? Missouri, it's said to be at an all-time high in terms of nursing shortage, with 16% or 6,000 staff nursing positions in Missouri hospitals vacant right now. Give us some national context here.
Well, it's estimated that the nursing workforce is going to have to grow by 20% per year by 2030 in order to just keep up with the demand that we're experiencing now in terms of the nursing profession.
And what are the projections calling for?
The projections are that we need 20% in addition to what we're doing now in order to maintain just an equal level of staffing that we have.
And in terms of the projections for graduates to fill that 20%, how close are you going to get to that 20%?
Well, we have to start. I think that we're going to have to be understanding that healthcare is changing significantly now. So not all of the jobs in the future are going to be hospital-based. So we need to start moving into public health. We need to look at population health and the social determinants of health and how nursing can be the backbone in that. And that's going to require more baccalaureate programs to deal with the complexity of where healthcare is going into the future. That's why we're so excited about the Salina program, because in Salina, they're going to be implementing a rural program that's basically, the research suggests that if you are born in a rural area and train in a rural area, you're more likely to go and practice in a rural area. So we don't want them to come to Kansas City, and we don't want them to go to Wichita. We want them to stay in these rural communities, train, and go back. The other thing is that 40% of the existing registered nurse workforce in this country is 50 years or older in age.
I read that.
And that's a cliff that we're about ready to go over in terms of need that that we need to recognize.
Yeah, Sally.
And just to add to that, it's not only the practicing nurses that we're seeing a shortage of. We've got a looming shortage of nursing faculty to educate those nurses. Our faculty did a study, actually it's a couple years ago now, where they showed that 30% of nursing faculty in Kansas were intending to retire in the next 5 years. And furthermore, the nursing faculty and associate degree programs, 50% were intending to retire.
No, Louanne, I'm wondering, why is this? I mean, nursing, my mother was a nurse, so I have great affinity for nurses. You know, why is there a shortage for a position that promises good, steady employment in an era when people want good, steady employment? What's going on there?
Well, I believe when, like you said, your mother, when I was in high school, there weren't a lot of opportunities for women, and so basically you either became a teacher or a nurse. There's just so many opportunities now and so many more doors open for women that oftentimes they can do engineering and medicine and so many other avenues that there aren't as many people going into nursing. I've myself gone to high schools and talked to them about careers in nursing, and I'm always struck by how many of the high school kids want to be a trainer or something with athletics. And, you know, I think we just don't push nursing as a career like we need to. So we're working on that as an organization and going out to area high schools, and I'm specifically sending a lot of our male nurses to talk about how their career in nursing has evolved and so that high school students could see themselves in a career in nursing.
Well, it's no secret, Sally, that nursing is just a hard job. And maybe its reputation is working against you a little bit, because I think even young people get it that they see nurses in hospitals. And in fact, you think about anyone in the healthcare profession these days, and you think of people who are overworked. You know, I went to the doctor yesterday. He's in a hurry. You know, that's just the way the world works these days. It's a hard job.
It is. And I think that's exacerbated by the shortages that we hear about. But it's also an increasingly complex job as healthcare and the healthcare system has become more and more complex. The need to understand that complexity has increased. So it creates higher demand on the educational systems as well as on our practice providers when they graduate and are out into practice.
So, Brock, when you're making a sales pitch to young people about going into nursing or healthcare, the healthcare profession in general, what lines tend to work best? Is there one?
Well, I like to think that it's a calling. I mean, I think that there's an element of service that has to go along with this. And people have a tendency, I think, to respond to need. And I think, first of all, just letting people know that this is a way to be an outlet for the talents that you have, serving people in ways that you might never imagine. And I think going forward, I'm excited about the nursing profession because I see a role within the space of population health that will really expand considerably the options for nurses. I know hospitals, because they're decreasing census and they're changing in their focus, they're moving nurses from the inpatient care to their care coordination role, taking complex patients with chronic disease like COPD or diabetes and lung disease.
What's COPD?
And, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's basically emphysema.
Of course it is. Yeah.
And and so you take patients in this population, and then you begin to work with them in this chronic context to reduce the incidence of their acute phases of that disease. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a creative talent to be able to work in this very complex environment to impact change in this population.
You know, Lou Ann Smith is, again, you're with the Salina Regional Health Center there as the chief nursing officer. What have you found to be the most salient selling points to a young person to get them to consider a career in healthcare or even nursing specifically?
Well, I think really the broad, as Brock said, the broad number of avenues you can take as a nurse. There's so many different areas besides hospital nursing. Of course, we want to fill those roles so that we can take good care of our patients. But there's also school nursing, industrial, nursing education, as Sally said, and then the medical home. Keeping people healthy and jobs and wellness. So there's just so many things that they can go into, and I think that's a huge selling point. The other thing is you can move anywhere and still have jobs in nursing. So relocation is easy, and I think that's important to a lot of people.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the nursing shortage in Kansas and in Missouri, across the country. If you have a question or comment, 816-235-2888 is the phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. You know, one thing I've heard, Brock, from just my reading here is I'm wondering if there's a problem when it comes to how much support nurses get in the jobs they do, the roles they take around the country. Is there a problem with just, you know, doctors are the kings and queens of doctors' offices and of hospitals, and do nurses sometimes get overlooked in all this?
Well, it's possible, but I think management of hospitals now are a lot more aware of becoming nurse-friendly facilities
and
implementing policies that really and value them as employees, as participants in this care process that we're talking about. And I think that I've seen a lot of progress made in that area, and I hope that that continues. I think, though, that Sally makes a very good point. Because of the shortage, it puts more pressure on those that are in the profession. So we've got this vicious cycle where we need more people to come and help alleviate the problems that we find in these facilities. So it's a vicious circle.
Sally, how about this notion that sometimes nurses are just overlooked?
Well, I think, fortunately, that's changing. If you look at the segments of the healthcare workforce, nursing is the largest segment of the healthcare workforce. One of the things that we're doing at KUMC is really focusing on interprofessional education for interprofessional practice. So it's focusing on team care, team management. And as that's growing, and we've got a wonderful opportunity in Salina with that, since we will be sharing the building and the physical space intermingled, our nursing students and our medical students.
You know, there's a doctor shortage in rural America as well, and all of this suggests, at least to me, that it's getting tougher to convince young people to stay in rural America for their careers. Lou Ann, how do you, anything else you're saying to convince a young person to consider the country? Because anyone who would do that is swimming against the tides, which these days are having younger people live in the nation's big cities.
Well, and that's really what we're hoping for by opening the School of Nursing, is that they won't get to the big city like Kansas City, and they'll stay in the rural areas and work in the rural areas and make their home there. We just hope that this rural education helps them to do that and move forward with staying in rural areas and providing the care that our patients need.
Brock, there's no question you're swimming against the tide here a little bit, the demographic tides, which have young people living in big cities. They love them, you know?
Yeah, and I think that there is the reality of the situation that we're facing. I think that there's been some solutions suggested. And one of the things is we need to study the issues of workforce development in this country a lot more than we have. The Affordable Care Act actually has the provisions in it that supported the creation of the National Healthcare Workforce Commission. Unfortunately, they asked for a mere $3 million to get that project underway, but the Congress refused to appropriate the funds for that. The reasons why I think that's important is because we need data. We need to understand why people are not attracted to healthcare professions. We need to have policies that the Congress and our administration implement that are friendly in this area. And then we need to make sure that that's translated down to the local level to where we're having an impact on the situation that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a national focus that I think that we could begin. They can pick that up. They can appropriate the monies for that. And I think it would be money very well spent, because certainly we're chasing a problem that we are only being able to make a dent in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where we need this national effort.
You know, Lou Anne, as you talked, I assume you spent some time talking to the 12 students who will make up your initial class come this fall. And I'm wondering what you picked up from those conversations in terms of why these younger folks, I assume they're younger, are interested in Salina and in healthcare and in starting off in your program.
Well, actually, I haven't gotten to meet the new students yet. We're really busy right now with the graduates, the summer graduates from the surrounding nursing areas. And so we have a lot of new grads coming into our facility now. And so I have talked with them, but I haven't actually met the ones that will be starting this fall yet. But I'm looking forward to that. And I think most of the new graduates, you know, a lot of times the reason they go into healthcare is because they've helped take care of a family member or a loved one who's mm-hmm. been ill, and that's really given them the call to care for patients.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Sally, if around a state like Kansas, if you're seeing any sort of bidding war for the services of young nurses, and if that's making this profession a little more attractive. If there's truly a shortage, you would think that good old supply and demand would kick in and maybe kick up salaries for nurses.
Well, I can't say that I've seen a bidding war for nurses. We certainly see health systems providing incentives, you know, such as the generous ones from Salina Regional. When you look across the nation, you do see health systems and hospitals that have that are well resourced, providing sign-on bonuses, sign-on incentives. Mm-hmm. But not all hospitals, not all health systems have the resources to be able to do that.
So you're not seeing much of that in Kansas, it doesn't sound like.
I haven't seen it. I don't know if maybe Lou Anne has.
Lou Anne?
Well, we do have sign-on bonuses and a lot of incentives to try to get experienced people here, along with our scholarship program and our loan forgiveness program. I think the hard thing in our area is we're a lot of businesses are vying for the same people in terms of the nursing assistants, and we have manufacturing and different things here in Salina, as well as just fast food and grocery stores that are all trying to get the same workforce. You know, in terms of getting people to even become nursing assistants.
Yeah. Brock, you seeing anything across the country when it comes to these kinds of incentives?
I have, and I was just in North Carolina 2 weeks ago in Kinston, North Carolina, about 2 hours east of Raleigh. And they're dealing with the nursing workforce shortage, just like we're talking. And one of the problems that that hospital is experiencing is the reliance on contract nurses. That's where nurses could be brought in at a contract rate, and they substitute or fill in needs that the hospital has. And the expense that that's creating for this facility is really causing a lot of financial harm to them. And so that's one of the solutions. They're looking for alternatives to that, and that's why these training programs are so important.
I can imagine hospital administrators all across the country are sweating bullets over shortages like this, Brock. You've been one. Mm-hmm. It must be tough.
It is tough because – you're trying to stretch a tarp over a very large area, and sometimes the tarp doesn't stretch, and so you get to a point where it is challenging to meet the needs of your community, which is ultimately what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. And then meeting those needs in a way that's safe and free from harm, and all of the things that go into good, solid quality patient care. And that's really the balance.
You know, we're wondering if there's a extra different training that health pros who work in rural areas need to have compared to urban practitioners. Luann, help us with that, because practicing healthcare in rural America is said to be different than practicing it in the cities.
Well, right. They are much more independent at times, and a lot of the rural areas are covered by advanced practice nurses who practice independently because of the physician shortage. They maybe have a covering physician who's in a neighboring town or something like that, but advanced practice nurses, you know, are helping to close that gap of shortage. And then I also wanted to say, along with what Brock said about the agency or traveling nurses and the higher wages for that, we here in Salina do not use any agency nursing. We've been able to eliminate that from our population of nurses. What we have done instead, in some cases, we have to actually close some beds on our med-surg units to be able to staff them safely with the staff that we have. But what we found in the past when we used travel nurses is that they, number one, cost us a lot more money, but number two, they were always recruiting from our staff and taking them with them when they left, because their travel agency would give them a bonus for recruitment.
You know, Sally, talk to us a little more about this difference between practicing health care in the cities versus rural America, because, again, what you read is that folks in rural America tend to be sicker at times. The challenges are a little bit different. There are cultural differences, societal differences, economic factors here. What do you notice?
Well, some of the things that we see in these areas is that, as Luann said, the healthcare providers have to be, if you will, jack of all trades.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the specialization in rural areas or the availability of specialists in rural areas that you do in urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to practice in a rural area, you have to understand and be competent in a much wider range of care than you do in an urban area. In fact, one of the things that I counsel graduating students to do is to go to a community healthcare setting. Graduates very often want to be at a large tertiary care hospital. The advice is no, go to a community hospital, go to a community setting. You're going to get a much greater breadth of experience than you are on a highly specialized unit. So
I think in journalism, you start at a small newspaper and you really learn how a newspaper is put together each day versus going to a big paper where you're immune to all of those kinds of things.
Right. And then you need to think about access to care, just geographic access.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we become creative in delivering care across broader geographic areas?
And that's a whole science, a new aspect of all this that's just coming to light these days, right?
Yes, yeah, you know? Telehealth.
Yeah, because you're going to be doing tele-education here in Salina from here in the Kansas City area.
We're going to be using interactive TV, plus we will have faculty stationed in Salina as well.
Hey, do you see more and more nurses and practitioners in Kansas using telehealth, telephone hookups, internet hookups to sort of practice medicine because people can't travel so far?
The one example of that I've seen being done very well is the Midwest Cancer Alliance and the ECHO program, who very heavily use telehealth and telecommunication to reach rural areas and to reach community health practices in keeping them up to date in cancer care.
Brock, what are you seeing around the country when it comes to telemedicine?
It is an expanding application. I think the exciting areas is in the is in emergency rooms and in ICUs. Mm-hmm. And so you have tertiary urban hospitals operating ICUs in rural and community hospitals, being able to provide that highly specialized service in an area that wouldn't be able to otherwise afford that kind of intervention.
I'm sorry, and you're seeing that how, Brock? How are small communities able to offer that specialized kind of care?
Oh, well, they Avera Health Systems, for example, up in South Dakota has a EICU program that they're marketing all over the Midwest, and they've got probably 20, 30 hospitals signed up for that program. Mm-hmm. In Mississippi, we have the tele-emergency program. So about 30 emergency rooms in rural Mississippi have advanced practice nurses in the ER, and then they have a board-certified emergency room specialist at the University Medical Center that is directing the care in all of those 20 hospitals. So they're getting the benefit of the local service that's being provided to the community, but they get the advantage of the confidence that the tertiary urban hospital provides in terms of making sure that the diagnosis is correct and that the treatment is going well and they can stay there. What they've actually seen is that they've increased the utilization of the local facility because they don't transfer nearly as many cases to the urban center.
That's interesting. Luann, how does the increasing diversity of small communities, I'm thinking about Garden City, you know, Liberal, you know, Kansas, maybe Salina, affect their people's health care needs? Have you noticed changes there?
We have quite a wide area that is our referral center, and that patients come into Salina from a very broad area, about 120,000 people in that area. And I would say that people are sicker a lot of times by the time they get here. You talked about rural and farming. A lot of times the farmers are resistant, you know, to go to the doctor. And by the time they seek health care, they're really quite ill and get transferred here from a variety of other hospitals. And then in terms of telehealth, we utilize that to our rural areas and mainly for behavioral health visits. For an mm-hmm. established patient, we're able to they're able to go to their home hospital and through telenetwork get hooked up and have their visit without driving to Salina.
That's interesting. We'll have to leave our conversation there. That was the voice of Luann Smith. She's Chief Nursing Officer for the Salina Regional Health Center. Luann, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Brock Slaybach joined us here in the studio. He's Senior Vice President for Member Services for the National Rural Health Association. Brock, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sally Molisky is Dean of the KU School of Nursing. Good luck in your new initiative. Hope it goes well.
Thank you so much, and we are excited.
You bet. Thank you, Sally. On tomorrow's show, why the U.S.-Mexico border matters to Midwesterners, and we'll visit some small towns that remain hopeful in spite of 21st century trends toward urban areas. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date, and you can follow me at Steve Kraske. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Marlia Campbell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.